The short story, The Ice Cream Company. Maggie and I decided to open a business in the corridor. However, we couldn't decide what that business would be. After several weeks of discussion and exploration, Maggie came up with the answer. The one business that was missing from the neighborhood and in the very shadows of the original Werner's Ginger Ale plant in the home of the Boston Cooler was an ice cream store. The space we decided to rent was next to a Lebanese restaurant called, of all things, Johnny's. Ours was a long, narrow space attached to three other storefronts on Warren Avenue at Cass, and just a high-o silver from the Maccabees building on Woodward Avenue, and the home of the original radio shows, The Lone Ranger, Green Hornet, and Sergeant Preston. The space was just that, space and nothing more. We had to practically rebuild it from the floor up. It was during this process that we discovered the joy of working with city bureaucrats. We also got our first taste of reverse racism. Coleman Young had been entrenched in the mayor's office for many years and, quite frankly, didn't treasure the thought of a white flight back into the city. We were naive to think that we would be welcomed with open arms. After all, how many new businesses had opened in Detroit's inner city in the last decade? Most of the white ethnic grocers fled the city after the 66 riots and were replaced by Chaldeans, who to this day have an arm lock on Detroit's inner city grocery business. Most party stores in our neighborhood at the time had double-strength bulletproof glass separating the store's staff from its clientele. They were also equipped with a Lazy Susan-type apparatus that enabled the storekeepers to receive money and not put themselves in jeopardy. For added security, a family member, usually, was stationed above the shoppers in the rear of the store, and he was armed with an automatic rifle and in clear view of the aisles. Back to the renovation of our store. Once we waded through the red tape, leaped over the many hurdles that were put in our way, and announced to the bureaucrats that we were not going away, everything started to fall into place. The whole process was a very eye-opening experience for us and baffling at the same time. One would think the city of Detroit would have turned backflips to get a new business like ours in the area. However, we discovered that we were the ones asked to do backflips. We also discovered that city employees often attempted to sell us tickets to charitable events. The tickets were usually void of a date, however, and when you pointed that out to the seller, you were asked, "Do you want to buy some or not?" Or not usually was followed by a building inspector who had no trouble finding many code violations that would prove to be much more costly than the $100 worth of raffle tickets you were being asked to buy. The help from our neighbors and friends, however, was very gratifying. Morris helped me salvage some tin paneling for the walls, and others helped us scrub the years of dirt, grease, paint, and neglect from the terrazzo floor. My father-in-law wired the shop and put ceiling fans up for nothing. The whole process took about 6 months and wouldn't have been possible without the financial help of a banker at Detroit Bank and Trust. They first turned us down for a loan, which wasn't surprising, but decided to reverse that decision after a phone call from my father, whose business had banked there for years. Getting Daddy's help at 35 wasn't something I cherished, but I figured this time it wouldn't hurt. After all, we're talking ice cream here. Maggie was an absolute ice cream addict, and she was my secret weapon for success. Just as most drug counselors are former users, doesn't it stand to reason that an ice cream addict and chocoholic would know how to sell ice cream? To get some backup, we called the Stroh Brewing Company. That's right, Stroh's, the beer people. You see, they also made and sold ice cream. They had to do something to keep the business afloat during Prohibition. So one of the Stroh brothers came up with the idea to make ice cream. Pretty good ice cream, too. They gave us a whole game plan and how to set up our shop, as well as recommendations for equipment, which they promptly sold us. Not a bad plan, huh? We also decided to add Häagen-Dazs. You see, the corridor's liquor stores taught me that folks don't scrimp when it comes to pleasure. If that was the only pleasure that was available to them, We soon found that people would spend the last $2 in their pocket on ice cream and worry about how to meet their other expenses later. A couple of days before we opened, we invited everyone who had helped us to a free party at the ice cream company. The sign out front, emblazoned with a 1939 Hudson delivery truck, sporting our new logo, announced to everyone that we were about to open. The night of the free party, I watched grown adults giggle out loud as they made their very own banana splits for free. But not free for us, as our accountant soon pointed out to us. You're going to have to sell a lot of ice cream the first month just to pay for that one night. Well, we sold a lot of ice cream and then some. The first day, the line of customers wrapped around the corner, all waiting to buy ice cream. It had been a long time since the neighborhood had seen anything like this. Families now had a place to take their kids. It soon became a neighborhood meeting place, and space around the vintage marble top tables were premium. Classical music filled the background, and the shop and its atmosphere were a sharp contrast to the world outside our door. We weren't stupid, though, and security was a factor. So we immediately informed the 13th Precinct Police Station around the corner that cops ate free. A police cruiser seemed to always be double parked in front of our store, and coppers looked forward to taking a break in what soon became their neutral zone. I also decided to put a vintage 38 Colt under the cash register aimed at every payee, and my trusty Al Kaline autographed Louisville Slugger baseball bat in clear view, just in case. On a few occasions, I had to remind patrons that this might be a job for Al Kaline. All I had to do was point to the bat, and my message came through loud and clear. You see, Morris Crispins had left a strong impression on me when he said that first day, "It didn't hurt to be a little crazy in the corridor." Well, word spread quickly not to screw with the ice cream man because he was friggin' crazy. Oh, well. I've been called worse. Unfortunately, that word didn't get to everyone because one day, a stranger to the neighborhood came into the store. It's remarkable how even in a big city, you can single out people who don't belong. A new face, an outsider, who comes into your area stands out. This person definitely did not belong. The perspiration on his brow and upper lip, his nervousness, and the handle of a pistol peeking over his belt and tucked inside his jacket told me he wanted more than ice cream. I slid my hand under the cash register and onto my 38 Colt. I had never had reason to use it, and I hoped that I would not have reason now. People about to commit a crime do not want attention. They do not choose to be the focal point. So I decided to do just that. "What can I get for you, young man?" He stammered. "Do you want some ice cream?" I asked. "Ice cream?" he asked back, looking around the store as he did. There were a few patrons sitting down and one more looking through the ice cream cooler. "Yes, ice cream. That's what we sell here," I announced rather loudly. He said nothing, but his nervousness now intensified. "How about some butter pecan?" Before he could answer, I scooped up a scoop of ice cream and pushed it into a sugar cone and held it over the cooler to him so he had to grab it with his right hand. Now he only had one hand free, and I had two. I then rested my right hand on my gun and said, "You're not from around here, are you?" I startled him, and he came back with, "Yes, I am." "No, I've never seen you before." I then turned to one of my customers and called out, "Jerry, have you seen this guy in the neighborhood before?" Jerry joined in the game. "Nah, I don't think so." Now everyone was looking at him. This is what he didn't want. "But you're always welcome," I declared. He nodded, and it was now clear to him that this wasn't the store to rob. Too much attention and too many witnesses. "Listen, because you're a first-time customer, the ice cream, it's on the house." Thanks, he muttered, and then turned and walked out of the store. He looked back through the window and then went on his way. I never knew if he went on his way to rob someone else or just to finish his ice cream. I never saw him again.